From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of June, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. We'll hear from Ben Brown, agricultural economist with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri and Extension there. We'll discuss last Friday's U.S. EPA RVO Renewable Volumes Obligation announcement. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Mark Russo as we close out our time together. He's with Everstream Analytics, and it all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn today at 8.34¾ finished 9¾ of a cent lower on the afternoon. The September at 4.19¾ down 8¾, and December 8 lower at 4.35. July beans unchanged, a settlement price at $10.69¾. August 10.71¾, up 2¾. And November finished 5¾ of a cent higher at $10.60½. Bean meal futures down $8.20 at $283.70. And the bean oil for the day at $55.11, up $4.50. Wheat futures, the soft red at $5.36½, down 7¼¢. The hard red at $5.36, 4¾ of a cent lower. Live cattle futures finished $3.10 higher. Feeders were up $3.80 and lean hogs up $2.55. Crude oil down $1.05 at $70.25 at this hour, and gasoline on the wholesale price just about 0.07¢ lower at $2.20¢. Actually, that's 0.7¢ lower, not 0.07¢. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. Hi, Kurt. Thanks much for being with us. We're watching lots of things happening in the marketplace. Iran, Israel, the EPA announcements from last Friday. Where would you like to start?
Oh, boy. Yeah, where do you start? A lot of optimism there last Friday with EPA announcements, renewable green. There's some other moving parts. Small refinery numbers are still to be worked on. But overall, the market did hold in there with that news. It's encouraging a little longer term, looking at a situation where everybody's looking for weather to help the market, but this announcement definitely gave the market a little bit shot in the arm. Today, beans settled in there, corn reached some resistance and back down to support. But on the bean sector, the crush came in 192.8, a little bit below the trade estimate, but we're above last month's 190. And last year's 183 million bushels being crushed. These crush numbers are going to go up if we see this legislation follow through and some of these numbers put in place. Bean oil stocks, 1.3 billion pounds. Trade was looking for about 1.4. Last month, 1.5. Last year, 1.7. Today's number, 137, is lower, which indicates lower bean oil stocks. So bean oil is expected to stay fairly supportive here as we move forward. The thing is, when you look at the bean oil prices with this optimism we saw Friday here, that's more longer term. We got to get things set in stone for the most part, and then a lot of this is going to kick in as we go into next year. And the front end is fairly strong compared to the back end. So for some reason, the urgency is up front to be a buyer here, getting some inventory bought, which is welcome. So we kind of saw buying beans, selling corn, buying beans, selling wheat on the spread today, Todd, as the market kind of waits for the next bit of news, which is, of course, weather, crop conditions, and a lot of other things, too.
Yeah, so we have crop conditions. We have events happening on the global stage. Which of those two have you been watching today, or both of them, I suppose?
Oh, you know, I just don't know which way to look anymore. The crop conditions report is expected to improve about 1% as a nation. Corn is expected to come in 72% good to excellent. versus 71% last week and 72% last year. So we're at last year's conditions. That being said, a year ago, we had corn carry out 2.2 billion bushels. Now the old crop, which is July, same crop years, down to 1.3, and we're about 90 cents lower. So, you know, we've got to have conditions erode fairly quickly here to the last bushel for the market to get excited, because we've got a considerable amount of less carry out than we did a year ago. Bean conditions expected to be 69% good to excellent versus 68% last week, 70% a year ago. The breakdown kind of central belt in through here, we're in fairly good shape. You go west, they've received some rains to give them short-term relief. The key is the eastern corn belt there, where they've been struggling tremendously here most of the spring, Doug.
So we have a Juneteenth holiday. That's on Thursday of this week. There will not be trade on that day. Resumption of trade on Friday, and then we come back up within another 2 weeks. We hit the July 4th holiday, too. So should be a busy end of the month, including that acreage number. Have you been thinking about it? And the grain stocks figure, too.
Oh, boy, yes. It's one thing after another. Come back from Juneteenth, Friday's first day of summer. So those, you know, watching the sign of the moon will watch market action going into Friday and coming out next week. Acreage report continue to look or hear a few more acres there in the western belt. Might offset maybe some prevent plant here in the eastern belt where it's been a little too wet. So, you know, a million acres here, half million there, that is quite a few acres. But the main focus once we get past end of the month reports here, of course, will be what type of yield you put on the crop. And that's going to be debated clear into this fall.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Very good, Todd. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. Joined us here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can search out the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast applications by name, or look it up at willag.org. Ben Brown, agricultural economist, University of Missouri with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute and Extension there, now joins us to take up a broader look at the agricultural marketplace. Hi, Ben. Thank you for being with us. There's a lot of ground to cover. A WASD last week. There's the Iran-Israel issues with oil. But right now, I'd like you to take up the U.S. EPA's announcement of the RVOs, that's the Renewable Volume Obligations, referencing biofuels. Those were released Friday. What did you make of them?
Sure, and I'm going to tie two of the things you just mentioned together. So the WASD report that was out the end of last week made some changes in the on the soybean oil side. It was really the only changes in the soybean complex, but they moved 200 million pounds of soybean oil use from domestic use, the biofuels, to the export market, which I think, you know, is justified. It makes a lot of sense. And then notably, if you look ahead to next year or the new marketing year, USDA estimated a 1 billion pound difference in the new marketing year of soybean oil use relative to the current marketing year. And as I was looking at that, I was like, the only way we're going to get there is if we see some policy changes. And that's what we got on Friday. So, you know, as you mentioned, EPA came out with their proposed renewable volume obligations on Friday that I think now put us on a path to hit USDA's targets, that 1 billion pound increase for the new marketing year. You know, the move came in higher than what many people in the industry had expected. You know, I feel like soybean oil has just been on a up and down roller coaster here over the last, I don't know, six, seven weeks. We had a lot of built up excitement that rallied the soybean oil market. Then it cooled off. And now we've seen a very favorable market, or a bullish market, for the soybean oil. Soybean oil was up their daily limit on Friday. That helped pull up the soybean market as well, gave it a little bit of life to it. And, you know, I think this really is a at least it's a multi-year, you know, step in a domestic demand increase picture to help support soybean prices. So It'll go through a comment period, and then we'll have a final ruling. But so this is just step one of the process. But you always got to start somewhere, and it's always nice to see, you know, the higher targets in the initial step.
So this is codified in law, relatively speaking, as it's related to the RFS, Renewable Fuels Standard. However, it is an advanced biofuel, meaning that's how it's codified in law, which that law put into place started the ethanol industry build out. Is this similar in that function, or is it different? It doesn't feel as if it's the same as what that ethanol build out might have been, but I might be misconstruing it.
Well, there's multiple buckets, and you know, we have the conventional ethanol bucket, which, you know, is the 15 billion gallons that everybody always talks about. Of course, it doesn't ever really end up being 15 billion gallons for or it hasn't for a while due to a variety of reasons, and it sometimes can get misunderstood. But, you know, when we think about this advanced biofuel bucket, you know, there's pathways for other fuels, not just fuels used from soybean oil, to compete in that space. But it really has been seen as a driver of the vegetable oils, namely soybean oil here in the United States, but canola oil and used cooking oil and tallow, other sources as well. And there are a couple of like nuances that make this a little different than the ethanol build out, but broadly speaking, this is going to be supportive of the investments that we've seen in the soybean crush space here the last couple of years. You know, I do think, you know, as a soybean oil processor or a soybean oil producer, this was about as friendly of an announcement as you could have asked for. Because not only did it increase the volumes, but then we also saw some changes on the feedstock source. So, like, you know, fuels that are made with international feedstocks, whether that be used cooking oil or even renewable diesel produced overseas, you are going to get half the RIN value moving forward. That was seen as a nice positive step. The one area where it was maybe a little bit of a, oh, I don't want to call it a disappointment, because that's probably understating, or it's probably, you know, mischaracterizing, but I don't know how else to say it. We thought we were going to get 3 years, 26 through 28 of rulings. We only ended up getting two, because the EPA quoted in their release saying that they felt like the market is just changing enough that to go out that far would kind of maybe potentially create some situations that were undesirable. So they only did 2 years, 26 and 27. And that can be, you know, good and bad, right? Like, if you get a policy that's favorable, you want it as long as you can possibly get it. If you get a policy that's unfavorable, you want it short so you can have a chance in the next year or two to rework it. So this was favorable. It is 2 years of a proposal, but like I said, I think it was about as friendly of a report as what soybean processors and soybean producers could have asked for.
Am I right that this is a renewable diesel function?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's renewable diesel, both from the biomass-based diesel component. You know, this it's using soybean oil. So just like the old, you know, the traditional biodiesel, right, that use soybean oil, renewable diesel uses vegetable oils as well. And of course, there is pathways for ethanol and the sustainable aviation fuel as well. But frankly, this is probably more seen as a renewable diesel category than that at this point. But
right. And so it is a way that brought both ag and oil industry people together on the same space.
Yeah. So there was, you know, there was a coalition, as I talked a couple, you know, at the beginning here, just, you know, 7 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago, whenever it was, and maybe I'm losing track of time. It was longer than that, but, you know, the two industries came together and made proposals, and that was seen as a significant, kind of achievement, because, you know, those were two industries that fought a lot for a long period of time, you know, in the years leading up to this, and they made proposals. Now these proposed requirements the EPA released on Friday aren't quite as strong as that, but they're certainly better than what the industry expectations were heading into the report. So,
do we have capacity within the soybean oil processing industry to do what US EPA has asked?
Yes, I think so. And everything would indicate that is where we're at. And this has kind of been the argument from the ag industry for a few years now, is that the requirements did not match the capacity that the industry had built, and that it was there, and the policy needed to match the infrastructure. And so, yeah, that was part of the reason why I think the oil industry and the ag industry was able to come to their compromise or their proposal, you know, a few months ago was based on that the infrastructure was there and that the requirements wouldn't create an undue burden on an artificial shelf that would whack the market or make it out of line, that this was something that was very possible, very doable, very quickly.
Does it have a regional impact? For instance, Minnesota, North Dakota, possibly Ohio, parts of northwestern Indiana?
Yeah, so I think there is areas where there is more soybean crush capacity, and that'll have a pull on soybean basis as well, and provide an opportunity there. But we've seen futures markets react as well, which is supportive of the entire Midwest, and so I do think that yes, you will see some regional basis pulls, but I do think that this is something that every soybean producer out there can see some support from.
So it will impact this growing season.
Yeah, I think USDA has decreased soybean oil consumption for our current marketing year downward a couple of times, and there's been justification for that. Even in the monthly crush numbers, we've had a couple of months where they just haven't been as strong as what we've historically seen them. I would remind people that when the marketing year started last year, when USDA first released their balance sheets last year, USDA keeps current policy in place over the long period, or in the long run, and the bioblenders credit, tax credit, that expired in January was still a policy then, and then that lapsed in January, and now we're 6 months or 5.5 months past that, and we haven't seen a renewal of that. And of course, Congress's intention is to replace that bio-based or bioblenders tax credit with some renewed or different policy, 45Z and other things, and we haven't gotten that through yet, or there's not a lot of clarity. There's language, but it's not official, so it's still unclear. And that's kind of delayed, I think, some of the ramp up that we've seen in the industry, and that's been supported in the last couple of months of soybean oil production here in the United States. And we've seen a lot of soybean oil in the export market. India, for instance, is really become a big buyer of U.S. soybean oil in the international space. The expectation is that they'll be a big buyer again in the new marketing year, that's kind of helped make up for some of the lack of the use in the domestic market. But like I said, USDA isn't trying to predict policy. They just take it into consideration. And I think they saw that we had the infrastructure and the capacity to increase domestic soybean oil use. And I think, when the report came out, I thought that was a little optimistic without the policy clarity. And then the policy clarity came. And so now I think that might be pretty close to what we could see in the next year.
Thank you, Ben. Ben Brown is an agricultural economist with the University of Missouri Extension and FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Let's take a look at the weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Hello, Mark. Thanks for being with us. I'd like to cover pretty in-depth the Midwest, though it appears to me it's in really pretty good shape. Can you give me an idea how things have progressed so far this season? And then we can talk about what the forecast looks like.
Yeah, overall, much of the spring was on the drier side, although except that was more so in the western part of the belt versus the eastern part of the belt. But as we've moved into June, we've seen more areas receive normal to above normal rainfall. There still are some dry pockets in and around southern Iowa into northern Illinois, parts of southern Wisconsin, but outside of those areas, and I guess the northeastern North Dakota as well, is one of those areas that have at least received below normal rainfall this month. That looks like it's now starting to change here with the pattern.
So to change that they'll be getting rainfall, you mean?
Yes, the pattern here this week and next week is looking very active across much of the Corn Belt, and that's especially true in the western half of the Corn Belt, all the way up into the upper Midwest, even parts of Canada. And the Canadian prairies are looking more active compared to what they have been. So those dry areas have really good opportunities to improve with this active pattern.
Is that a ring of fire function or some other weather phenomenon?
That is being driven by the movement of the ridge of high pressure, which right now is over the desert southwest or Four Corners area. It is going to be moving eastward, and by, well, over the upcoming weekend, it is going to be centered over the southeastern part of the country. But since it's centered southeast, yeah, north of there, it will be pretty active, and that's aligned here across the Midwest. That ridge over time then, late next week and beyond, looks to start shifting back westward again, but that still looks to keep the Midwest in an active zone. So overall, it's a active pattern here. I will also add that temperatures are going to be heating up quite a bit with the ridge of high pressure influencing the Midwest more. But even with the heat, again, it's going to be pretty active. Lots of thunderstorms, even some severe weather at times here in the Midwest.
Harvest is underway in Kansas and the hard red winter wheat growing regions. What conditions are they working under?
Yeah, not the greatest conditions in recent weeks, given this active pattern across the plains. Lots of severe weather, heavy rainfall in parts of Kansas and Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle. Things are improving, but gradually over the next couple of weeks. This week specifically is going to be drier compared to what it has been, but it's not going to be totally dry. And approximately a little over a third of the belt of the Plains Hard Red Belt will pick up significant rainfall. Next week looks even a little bit drier compared to this week. So it's not an abrupt turnaround, but things are gradually improving for harvest progress there in the central and southern plains.
Anything of interest or concern in Europe that we should be watching?
Yes, concern is increasing for summer crops in Europe, especially Southeast Europe, which currently has a very low soil moisture across that area. Over the next couple of weeks, significant heat is building into much of Europe and rainfall will be below normal. So soil moisture is going to be decreasing as crop stress increases. Right now, at least the biggest concern is in the southeast, but have to watch, does more of Europe trend even hotter and drier as we move into the key month of July?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world online on demand at willag.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.